A holy and auspicious day. The sampradaya in which we are following is coming in the disciplic succession, which was originated by Lord Sri Krishna. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur composed a beautiful song glorifying all of the illustrious personalities of our disciplic succession. At the beginning of the creation, the Supreme Lord spoke this transcendental knowledge to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, in turn, repeated the same message to his own self-manifesting born son, Narada. When I say self-manifesting, Narada was not born like an ordinary living being. He was born directly from his father, Brahma. What is it that was given to Narada Muni? It was the exact same message that Brahma heard from Krishna. Evam parampara praptam idam raja shayavidhu. In approaching the path of spiritual life, this is a very urgent and important thing to understand. Not only in the beginning, but through all stages until we attain the perfectional stage and never take birth again in this material world. And that is that we should receive the authorized knowledge, which is coming through the unbroken chain of disciplic succession. However mystical, magical, or charismatic a person may be, we cannot truly know whether they are speaking, what they are speaking, is the highest truth, unless they can cite the disciplic line of great masters in which they have received the knowledge through. Of course, previously in this great land of India, this was simply a matter of fact that anyone serious about spiritual life knew you had to accept from one of the great disciplic successions or sampradayas. But today, as Kali Yuga has progressed, there are so many people who manufacture their own religion, their own spiritual paths, their own presentations of how to achieve God. And in this way, people are bewildered. What is true and what is not? When you go into the marketplace of spirituality, you will find so many different versions contradicting one another. So many gurus, so many mats, so many ashrams, so many bhagavans, gods, and they're all saying that they are right. So is everybody right? Or is nobody right? How do we know? When I first came to India, I was a boy of 19, and I was very deeply searching for a teacher who could show me the path of perfection. Because we had lived so many years in a materially affluent country, the United States. How many Indians do you know want to go to the United States to live? Or want to get their children married in the United States so they could live with material luxury and pleasure, not so much disease, hardship, and poverty? But I'll tell you, living in that culture, we were searching for some way out of it, for a life with meaning, a life with spiritual substance. Material life is empty, it is shallow, it is superficial, and ultimately it's so boring that such a civilization has to create all sorts of perverted, concocted ways of just relieving their minds of boredom. And those technological discoveries are considered something very great. And people here in India, they want those things very bad. But we should understand their origin is because people are so frustrated because they're not simply learning how to find pleasure in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. To substitute that negligence of finding pleasure in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, they have created CDs and cassettes and televisions and cinemas and all sorts of computers and all sorts of everything else. So we understood it was actually not worth living a life that was so superficial, that was so meaningless. There must be a purpose. So we traveled through Europe studying Christianity. We traveled through the Middle East studying Islam. We came to India because we had heard that of all places in the world, India is the place where people really know God. And to my surprise, when I came to India, I found that the common people wanted to go to America to learn how to enjoy material life. So we actually had to search harder than we thought we would. And then when we entered into the arena of spiritual masters and yogis and gurus and sadhus, we found so many different ideas, so many conceptions, so many paths. And some people say, yatama tatapat, all paths lead to the same goal. So I was thinking, yes, so let me follow all of them. I'll take the best from each one and I'll have my own custom-made path of perfection. So I was very submissive student, wherever I would go, traveling like a sadhu in the Himalayas and other parts of India. And I discovered that anyone with intelligence could know that they can't all be right, because they're all condemning each other. And they're giving very, very different explanations of what is God, and very different paths of how to achieve it. So they can't all be right. And I didn't believe they were all wrong. But how do we understand who's right and who's wrong? We met people who appeared to be very ecstatic in their bodily transformations of so-called love, and who spoke with such incredible power that they would mesmerize people. But as we lived with them, we found their personal lives were a contradiction to what they were preaching. We also met yogis who could perform miraculous powers, creating things, transforming themselves into various ways that material mind would never believe. But still we noticed that their false ego was bigger than the common man on the street. And so many people explaining things so deeply philosophical But then the next person is defeating that person's philosophy with the same expertise. And the next person is defeating both of their philosophies with even greater expertise. So how do we understand what is the truth? And then we met so many common people who just follow what their families have taught them. You just accept what your father and your mother and your grandfather and grandmother and great-grandfather and grandmother. And basically, they were following so much ritual, they didn't even know what they were doing or why. Is religion limited to just superstition and sentiment? So in the marketplace of spirituality, how do we know what is the truth? God has come to this world to give us the truth, and he's created this world for the purpose of us all knowing the truth. So there must be some indication from God how we can understand and calculate what's right, what's wrong, what's high, and what's low in spiritual knowledge. And Krishna explained, evam parampara praptam idam rajashayavati imam vivashvate yogam. He explained that if you want to know the truth, you must accept it through an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. The real guru is not a magician. He's not a showman or an entertainer. He's not one who mesmerizes you or shows you colored lights or makes you hear sirens in your ears or one who gives you mystical gifts. The real guru is the humble servant who simply repeats what he has heard from his guru in the line of disciplic succession. Tene brahma hridaya adhikavye muyanti yatsura. So there are four principal disciplic successions in the religion of Sanatan Dharma here in India. And one such disciplic succession originated with Lord Brahma. He spoke to his son, Narada Muni. Narada Rishi, in turn, spoke to that literary incarnation of Godhead who compiled the great Vedic literatures, Vedavyas. Vedavyas later explained the same knowledge to Madhvacharya. Of course, we should understand that from the time of Vedavyas to the time of Madhva, there were hundreds and thousands of great self-realized gurus who passed down this knowledge. But to have a disciplic line written that goes to beginning of creation is very complex and very difficult. Therefore, the great acharyas have summarized this disciplic succession with the key, most important personalities that pertain to our reception of this knowledge. In other words, there are so many branches that comes through evam parampara. So we would like to speak about the life of Madhvacharya very briefly, because it is through Madhvacharya's line of disciplic succession that the Supreme Lord himself, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, decided to receive knowledge. And from Lord Chaitanya, Rupan Sanatan, Jiva Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Narottam Srinivas, Vishwanath, Baladev, Jagannath Das, Bhakti Vinod, Gorakishore, Bhakti Siddhanta, and our own beloved Guru Maharaj was the humble and empowered representative of this great line of truth. By receiving through such a line of truth, we know 100% for sure that what we are receiving is the original Word of God. No magic. The mercy of God is greater than any magic that we can see with our eyes. Through that sound vibration, our heart can be cleansed and brought to its original natural position of pure, unmotivated, uninterrupted love of Krishna. In Karnataka, South Kannada district, there is an area which is sometimes called Parasuram Kshetra. It was actually created long ago by the incarnation of the Lord Parasuram. Within it, today is a very holy place called Udupi. A few miles from Udupi is a village of the name of Pajaka Kshetra. It was about a little over 750 years ago that there was a great Brahmin who lived in Pajaka Kshetra. His name was Madhyageha Bhat. And he very much wanted to have a male son because he had no children. As time went on, he had two male sons born, but in their infancy, they both died. We should know that on the external level, he wanted a son to carry on the name of his family and to perform the Shraddha ceremony when he departed. That is the Hindu custom. But deeper than that is the Supreme Lord is in everyone's heart. And ultimately, it is the Supreme Lord that invokes particular desires within people to further his own mission. So it was the Lord himself who invoked that burning desire to have a son within the heart of Madhyageha Bhat. So every day he would walk the long distance between Pajaka Kshetra to Udupi, where there was a temple called Ananteshwar and Chandramali Mandir. And in the Ananteshwar temple, he would worship the Supreme Lord. With great, great devotion, he was performing fasts, doing tapasya, praying with such sincere feeling, "My Lord, please grant me a son that will do wonderful work in this world for the benefit of humanity." He performed this yajna of going every day to this temple, fasting and praying for 12 years. And one day, the pujari came off of the altar of Lord Narayan and announced that "I have received an indication that very soon an illustrious personality will be born." The Lord sent Vayu, the wind god, who had previously incarnated as Hanuman in Ram's Leela, and then he incarnated as Bhima in Krishna's Leela. He sent him to be the child of Madhyageha. His wife's name, I believe, was Vedavati. And When the child was born, he was born on Dasera, very auspicious day of the victory of Lord Ram. He had such wonderful and beautiful qualities. He was the pride and the joy of not only his parents, but everyone around. When he was very young, he performed wonderful miracles because he was actually none different than Bhima and Hanuman, who would come again. It is described that one time in his childhood, his father, although he was a Brahmin, he was a landowner. And one time he bought bullock from one businessman. And because his crops were not growing properly that year, he actually had no money to pay his debt. So in those days, people would take advantage of the Vedic customs. What this person did, this debtor, this person he owed the money to, is he came to the house and he told Madhyageha that I'm going to sit at your door and I'm going to fast until you pay me the money. Now what does this mean? A grihastha, if any guest comes to his house, he has to greet him with hospitality, and he's not allowed to eat until after his guest eats. So what did this mean? This means either Madhyageha had to break the custom, which he never would do because it's sinful, or he would have to fast as long as this person was fasting. So days went by, and nobody could eat. So Madhyageha told his little son, who was given at the name of birth Vasudev. He told little Vasudev that you should go eat prasad. And Vasudev said, but what about you? And he told him, I cannot, because this guest, he's not eating, I cannot eat. I owe him money, and I have no money. And he was using his brain and using all of his facilities to try to figure out how to pay this person back. So little Vasudev, he went to this guest and he said, please come with me. And he took him in the backyard of the house, and there was a tamarind tree. And he picked up a handful of tamarind seeds. And he said, here, you kindly take this. Because Vasudev was so beautiful, so charming, the man just had to do whatever he said. So he opened his hands, and Vasudev dropped the tamarind seeds in his hands, and right before this man's eyes, the tamarind tree's seeds were transformed into golden coins, the exact amount that was owed to him. So he went back, and he went to Madhyageha, and he said, oh, now your son has paid me very nicely, so you can take nice prasad. Thank you very much. I am going. How my son has paid you? He told him. He gave me tamarind seeds that turned into gold coins. If you go to Pajaka Kshetra, that same tree is still there. It is a great place of pilgrimage for all those devotees who worship the lotus feet of this great personality. When he was only 5 years old, he was given the sacred thread. In his education, he was so incredibly intelligent that when his teachers would teach him scripture, he would actually correct them whenever they would make mistakes. And he would actually teach them scripture. And people, one time, his father was giving a lecture, because his father was also a preacher. He was giving a lecture from the Upanishads. And he started to misquote a particular Sanskrit sloka. And his son immediately explained what is the right pronunciation of the Sanskrit. Just a child. Another time, someone was describing the Puranas, some of the stories. And little Vasudev, he began to explain with incredible accuracy the details of these stories. And when they asked him, how do you know all these things? No one ever taught you any of these things. With great humility, he would say, from my previous births. And people were struck with wonder. One time it is explained that a particular serpent, or a particular demon, an asura, who was spoken about in the Mahabharata, his name was Maniman. He was living in Pajakakshetra in the form of a huge, terrible serpent. And little Vasudev, he used to love to go out and play in all different places. He had tremendous physical strength because he was actually Bhima and Hanuman. So sometimes when he was at school, he was very fond of athletics. Practically the whole day, he would just be doing sports, and he would always be victorious because he was so strong. And sometimes his teachers would say, how are you going to learn your studies properly if all day long you're doing sports? He said, I know everything, but you'd hardly come to classes. You're always doing these sports. He said, you test me on any subject. And when the teacher tested him, he realized that he knew everything. So one day when he was playing, out from the bushes, this terrible, horrible demon in the form of a snake just pounced on little Vasudev, roaring with its poisonous fangs ready to bite him. And little Vasudev threw the snake to the ground, and with his toe, he crushed the serpent's head. Hadiya! And all the people around saw this. They were struck with wonder. How is this possible? Meanwhile, because of this feist with the snake, little Vasudev was late for home, and his mother was very much worried about him. So she called out, Vasudev, Vasudev, come home. And little Vasudev didn't want his mother to worry. So even though he was a long distance from home, with one jump, he landed right before his mother. Hanumanji ki! The devotees of Madhvacharya explained that on that day, by killing the snake, he exhibited his prowess of Bhima, and by jumping to his mother, he exhibited his prowess of Sri Hanumanji. And if you go to Pachakakshetra near Udupi, the same place where that snake was killed is still there. There's a rock with the impression of the snake's body. And there's an indentation of the rock where Madhva pulverized his skull with his toe. Medieval. So many wonderful pastimes he performed when he was a child. But after he completed his education at the age of 12, he was very brilliant, he decided he wanted to take sannyas. What is the use of all this material life? Why did he want to take sannyas? So that he can be completely free of any other obligation than to preach the glories of the Lord, which he considered was the most great need in human society. You know, there are so many companies and so many factories and so many laboratories that are trying to provide necessities of life to people. But what is the greatest necessity?
Atato brahma jigyasa.
Human life is meant for self-realization. Krishna says in Gita, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam, that the real problems of life is not lack of food or lack of education or lack of medical facilities. These are problems, and no doubt they must be dealt with. But the real problem of life is the repetition of birth, old age, disease, and death. Because however wonderfully you solve the immediate problems, you still have to face death and disease and rebirth. So what is the greatest service that anyone can do for human society? To expound the true principles of Dharma, pure bhakti, by which one can never have to take birth in this world again, but attain the eternal loving service of the Lord, which is the longing, the great longing of every soul. The body wants food. The mind wants nice companionship. But the soul is longing for a loving relationship with Krishna. And you are not the body, you are not the mind, you are the soul. This body and mind are only temporary superficial coverings. To supply the demands of a person's soul is the greatest service to humanity. And Madhvacharya, who at that time was little Vasudeva, he decided that I want to render the greatest service to all humankind. I want to spread the true principles of bhakti, of devotion to God. And therefore, I must take sannyas. So this little 12-year-old boy, one day, he just left his home and he went to Udupi to find some great spiritual personality who would be his guru and give him sannyas. So there was one very, very learned and very pure soul. His name was Achyuta Preksha. He had his mat, his monastery, just outside of Udupi. And little Madhva used to spend most all of his time there. And his father, he was hardly seeing his son anymore. And the father, Madhva, Vasudev, was his life and his soul. He was his everything. He performed 12 years of tapasya to have this child. And he raised this child with so much affection and so much love and so much care. He gave him the best he possibly could of everything. And now his child was showing no interest in the family anymore. This was breaking the heart of his father. You must produce offspring and give me grandchildren. How can we live without you? So Madhyageha Bhata went to Udupi area. And there he found little Vasudev, 12-year-old boy, living with, at that time he was not even 12, he was actually only about 11, 10 or 11 at the time. And he said, "You must come home." And he said, "No, father, I am going to accept the life of renunciation." 10-year-old boy saying like this, how is this possible? His father, first, he began to, with sweet words, encourage him, "Come home, come home." But that didn't work. Then he started weeping and crying, "How you're breaking your heart. You're breaking my heart. Look what I've done for you. I've done everything for you. I've given you life. I've raised you. You cannot do this to me. You must come home." The little Vasudev was not the slightest bit moved by his father's tears. Then his father began to
angrily chastise him, shout at him, demand an order you come home, threaten him. The child was strong in his determination. Finally, as a last resort, the father threatened that if you don't come home, I will commit suicide. So little Vasudev got a piece of cloth and tore it to become like a kopan and put it on himself and said, then you commit suicide. Then his father fell at his son's feet and was begging him, please, please, don't do this to me. Come home. And little Vasudev said that this is a prophecy. What I see is a prophecy. Because a senior person like you would never fall at a child's feet unless he's a sannyasi. So the father was saying, we have no other children. Anyways, the father went home and told the mother, and the mother began to cry, and they decided somehow or other they have to get Vasudev to come home. So Madhyageha Bhat again returned to the ashram, but by that time Achyuta Preksha was going on a tour of some of the southern provinces, and little Vasudev was with him. So the father began to run to try to catch up with them. And he came to one small little village near a forest on the bank of a river. And there Vasudev was with his Gurudev, and his father was pleading with him. They got in big argument and everything. In this way, father tried everything he possibly could do. But then, somehow or other, he spoke some words to soften the heart of Vasudev. He said, we are very old, and we have no one to take care of us. How can you leave us alone like this? Who will maintain us? We're getting older and older and older. So Vasudev said, all right, you talk with mother and you get her approval that if another son is born, then you will give me blessings to take sannyas. So that was agreed upon, not willingly, but as a last desperate attempt to try to stop him. But very soon after that, she became pregnant, and she had a little son. And Vasudev came home and asked his parents, now a son is born, now you give me blessings. They said, no, we cannot give you blessings. You're only 12 years old. How can we give you blessings to take sannyas? So he told his mother, if you don't give me blessings to take sannyas, I will leave this place and you will never see my face again as long as you live. If you give me blessings, I'll take sannyas, but sometimes you'll get to see me. So she decided it's better to see my son as a sannyasi than to never see him. So they gave their blessings. Not exactly heartfelt blessings, but blessings. All right, you do it. So then he took sannyas. This also took place in the Ananteshwar temple. There was a big celebration. All the people from all around came because they all loved little Vasudev with such intimacy. And they saw this beautiful little boy with golden complexion taking off his silken robes and his jewelry and putting on the drab saffron cloth of a sannyasi, and he took the danda and he looked very illustrious, and everyone was celebrating. Tears were flowing from everyone's eyes. And his Gurudev gave him the name and the time of taking sannyas, Purna Pragya.
After he accepted the renounced order of life, he began to preach very vigorously. At that time, in that part of India, and for that matter throughout India, most of what we call Hinduism, or the religion of Sanatan Dharma, was pervaded by the philosophy of Advaita, as propounded by Shankaracharya. And there were still some remnants of Buddhist philosophy, which teaches Shunyavad, Nirvishesh. So, this little child, sannyasi, he was propounding the philosophy of Dvaita, which explains that the soul is eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Soul. That the Jivatma, the spirit soul within the heart of every living being, can never become God. That Jivatma has an eternal form in the spiritual world. And that the Paramatma, the Supreme Soul, has an eternal form in this spiritual world. And that form is the form of Narayan, or Krishna. And that the perfection of life is to develop pure unalloyed devotion to Narayan, or Krishna. And that devotion and that desire to serve is eternal. It never ends. That the conception of the soul merging into the oneness of Brahman was an inferior understanding of the Vedic truths. And he established it so strongly on the basis of the Upanishads, the Vedas, and the Puranas. And he was preaching so boldly that all the philosophers and the gurus of the sadhus of the Shankarite school were becoming very much afraid. And so were the Buddhists, because they were teaching that there is no God. The Buddhists teach that there is no God at that time. And the Shankarites teach that there is a God, but ultimately he's formless. He has no personality. He has no attributes. That when he appears with a form in this world, and he performs lila, that form and lila is ultimately maya. It is a temporary manifestation. But in the supreme sense, God has no attributes. So this impersonalism and voidism was rampant. Two great scholars of the Nirvishesh school, the Buddhist school, Shunyavad, they came. One's name was Shobhana Bhatt. I'm sorry, this is different. Anyways, these two great scholars came and they publicly wanted to make a fool out of little Vasudev, Purna Pragya. So they called a debate, and everyone around came to this debate. And they were debating so ferociously. And this little child was so much defeating. First he defeated every one of their arguments. And then he began to present arguments. And they didn't have a reply to a single argument. And they were becoming so frustrated, so embarrassed in front of everybody, that a child was annihilating them philosophically. Upon seeing this, out of courtesy, because they were so elder to him, Purna Pragya Maharaj said, "Why don't you just admit that you have been defeated today and we'll continue the debate tomorrow?" So they had no choice. Either they had to admit defeat, or he would go on defeating them and making fools out of them for the rest of the day. So that night,
They packed their things and secretly disappeared, never to return. Arrivo!
Arrivo!
In this way, so many people would come, and we have to know that it was out of great compassion, because it describes that when Madhvacharya would be challenged by these opposing philosophies, although he would very soundly defeat them, he did it with such humility. There was never even the slightest trace of egoism in his personality or in his voice. He actually did it as a humble service to those people. He was truly a bhakta. You know, in this world, when you're good at debate, sometimes you indication of impersonalism or voidism, he would completely refute and establish that God is a person. And it's an offense to say anything else of him. And we should love him and we should serve him. But he did it with such humility, with such a mood of compassion and service, that even those who were defeated by him would generally be very pleased to be defeated, and they would surrender to him and become his disciples. Seeing this, Achyuta Prakasha decided to perform a ceremony to coronate Purnaprajna as the next leader of the Mat, like a king will coronate the son who will be the next king as the Yuvaraj or the prince. And he gave him the name at that time Ananda Tirtha. And at that time he was also called Madhava. And because Madhava was the name of Krishna, who was the worshipable lord of this great personality, he favored this name above others. And from that time his principal name was Madhava or Madhvacharya. He took many of his disciples on a tour of South India. And while he was traveling, he happened to come across the chief acharya of the Sringeri Math of Shankaracharya. And he heard about this little boy who was preaching so much against the Advaita school and establishing devotion as the highest in the supreme path. So he approached the child, young boy at the time, and they got in a little bit of a philosophical discussion, and he realized that this boy is undefeatable. He's going to ruin everything. Everyone's going to become devotees because of him. So he began to present the Sariraka Bhasya, the commentary of Bhagavad Gita of Shankaracharya. And little Madhva completely defeated every point and explained how it's not the highest truth. And he established bhakti, Vaishnavism. At that time, this great acharya told him, if you don't accept Shankaracharya's commentary of Bhagavad Gita, then you should write your own. You don't even have one. You have nothing to establish your own philosophy as far as a commentary. So the child said, all right, I will take that as an instruction and I will write. But he decided that if he really wanted to write the proper and perfect commentary on Bhagavad Gita, he would have to get the blessings of the author of Bhagavad Gita, Vedavyasa, and Lord Narayan himself. So he decided to go to Badrikashram, because in the Shastra it is explained that throughout all of Kali Yuga, Vedavyasa never leaves the world. He remains in a divine form in the Himalayas, in the divine realm of Badrikashram. So Madhvacharya took his disciples, some of them, and they went on the long journey by foot from South Canada, Udupi, all the way to Badrik Ashram. And he got to the place of Badrik Ashram. Badrik Ashram is a big area where the temple of Nara Narayan is, Badrinath. Some of you may have gone there. And he went into the Didi room and he began to pray to Badri Narayan. And he began to read some of the commentary that he was writing on Bhagavad Gita. And his disciples, who were outside the Didi room, could actually hear the voice of Vishnu telling Madhva that you have my blessings and empowerment to write the perfect commentary of Bhagavad Gita. So he became very happy. And then he decided to go to Adi Badri, which is a place no human being can attain by mortal means, way, way deep up in the Himalayas. He said, that is where Vedavyas is residing. So he told his disciples, you should wait here because you will not be able to go there. But one of his disciples, his name was Satyatirtha, he began to follow him because he was always at his side. In fact, Madhvacharya would not write, but he would dictate. And whatever he would dictate, Satyatirtha would write down. And this is the way he would make his commentaries, the Vedic literatures. So Satyatirtha was walking and walking for many days. And Madhva, day or night, he just kept walking through deep, deep snow, way up in the Himalayas. He didn't stop to eat, he didn't stop to sleep. And it was very high. And Satyatirtha was completely exhausted. They were going on for days and days and days. And one day Madhva looked back at him and said, you should return back. And then he took his hand and went like this. And he went like this because he's actually Vayu, the wind god. A wind came and pushed Satyatirtha all the way back to where all the other devotees were waiting. Arrivo! And then he told the devotees, this is what happened. Now it is said that people previously had tried to find Vedavyas at Adi Badri, but generally they would never return. So actually before he left for that journey, he wrote a will. He said, because I may or may not live to come back. What was his will? He had no possessions. He had no property. His will was, he taught them to always preach the pure principles of Gita, Sanatana Dharma, and always practice bhakti. So with great enthusiasm and expectation, he achieved the hermitage of Vedavyas. And at that time, Vedavyas was sitting in assembly of great sadhus, and he was explaining the Bhagavad philosophy to them. And Madhva was so happy that he came to his guru, and with utter humility, he fell down like a rod, and he laid there in full prostration, bowing down to his spiritual master, feeling the greatest ecstasy and fortune that I am seeing my guru. That time, Vedavyas, he gave him what we would call initiation by accepting him as disciple. And he also gave him his blessings to continue his work of commentating on the Bhagavad Gita. So it was there that he completed that commentary, and with the blessings and the love of his guru upon him, he returned. And with his disciples, they returned to Udupi and began preaching and began delivering Krishna bhakti to everyone. It is explained that Madhvacharya, besides being a great scholar and very, very physically strong and powerful, he was also a very beautiful singer. And he wrote wonderful bhajans and used to sing with very sweet, loving voice the glories of Krishna.
So one day, he was singing beautiful songs, composing them as he was singing them in glorification of Lord Krishna, as he was walking to the ocean side. And when he came to the sandy beach, there was a storm. And in this storm, there was a boat coming from Dwarka. And that boat got caught in the sand and actually began to sink because of the storm. And the boatman didn't know how to save himself. And Sri Madhvacharya was at the shore. And he took his chadar and he began to wave it. And as he waved it, the storm ended. And then he just waved to the boat. And as he waved to the boat became free from the entrapment in the sand and came to the shore. And the boatman was so grateful. He had so much precious goods on this cargo ship of his. He said, I want to give you a gift. I'll give you anything. I'll give you everything. What would you like? And Madhvacharya said, I am a sannyasi. What do I want your material gifts for? But sannyasis put on tilak. And you are coming from Dwarka, and Dwarka is the place where Gopi Chandan comes from. Do you have any Gopi Chandan on your boat? And the boatman told him, it just so happens that this Gopi Chandan, which is mud, earth, he said, in order to balance the boat so that the weight was equal, sometimes we use these big blocks of Gopi Chandan for that purpose. He said, you just give me that nice tilak. So they had these big, big mounds of Gopi Chandan, and they started taking them off the boat. And as they took one of them off the boat, it broke open. And as it cracked open, there was a beautiful deity of Lord Krishna. Bhagavan Shri Krishna ki!
Jai!
Udupi Krishna ki!
Jai!
The story of that murti is very wonderful. It is described that at the time that Lord Krishna was living in Dwarka, in the palace of Rukmini, Devaki once approached Dwarkadish Krishna and told him that I actually gave birth to you in Mathura, but the first night of the birth, you told us to take you to Gokul, and your entire childhood you were raised by Yashoda Devi. And then finally when you came back to Mathura, you were already grown up. So I never got to see the beautiful form of Bal Gopal, but I've heard so many wonderful stories about it. Can you please kindly give me the darshan of your wonderful form of Bal Gopal? So at that time, Lord Krishna, the king of Dwarka at the time, he transformed himself into his Vrindavan Leela form, where he was stealing butter. And he had, Mother Yashoda used to churn butter, and Krishna would sometimes, when he would steal it, he would hold the churning rod in one hand, and the rope in another, and butter in another. So he showed her that beautiful form. And she was very happy. And Rukmini happened to see that beautiful darshan as he was revealing it to Devaki. So Rukmini later on asked Krishna that, please, I want to worship you in this form because I see that this form is more beautiful and lovable than any other form. So Krishna made a beautiful deity of himself, with the churning rod in one hand, with rope in another, and butter in another, and Rukmini worshipped that murti as her Ishtadev. But at the time that Dwarka, most of Dwarka went under the ocean, just after the disappearance of Lord Krishna, that deity was actually put in the Gopi Talab, where all Gopi Chandan is coming from, and it was under the ground.
So when the boatman took Gopi Chandan, he took a big block, but the deity was in that block and revealed itself to Madhvacharya. This is the Leela of the Lord. So Madhvacharya was so happy. He told some of his disciples, let us bring this deity back to Udupi and put him in and build a nice temple for him. So they tried to lift him, but he was so heavy. 30 men couldn't even budge the deity from the ground. So finally Madhvacharya said, all right, let me do it. And he effortlessly lifted it up and began to carry him back to Udupi. And as he was carrying, he began to compose beautiful songs in glorification of Krishna. And to this day, the followers of the Madhvacharya line in Udupi, the Tattvavadis, they sing these beautiful prayers that Madhvacharya composed upon the advent of Udupi Krishna. And then he had a nice temple. By that time he had so many followers, even kings that were surrendered to him. He could have built a huge temple like Sri Rangam, but he wanted to keep it very simple. For those of you who have gone to Udupi, you know it's a very simple temple. He wanted to keep it like that. He wanted Krishna to be more in the center rather than the temple and worship in that way. There are many stories of Madhvacharya's travels when he would be preaching. Sometimes he would manifest the ability to eat of Bhima. One day he was traveling and they offered him a big full meal, and then they brought in 200 bananas for everybody. And they said to Madhva, please take some bananas. So he ate all 200 bananas. Haribo. Other times he would eat hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bananas. Anyways, when he wanted to eat a lot, he could eat whatever anyone wanted to give him. And people used to wait to see whether he'd get indigestion, but he never got indigestion. Arivo. At this time, he really established the temple at Udupi. He very, very carefully taught his disciples how to worship the deities. He gave eight of his principal disciples sannyas and gave them the charge of the temple, alternating, and he established so many wonderful rules and regulations that are being followed to this day in Udupi. And he was writing so many books and giving so many lectures and preaching and traveling. But then he decided he wanted to go to see his Gurudev again, Vedavyas, in Badrik Ashram. By this time he had many, many followers. On their way, there was a king, a very cruel king. And whoever was passing on this road, the king wanted to build a lake, because it's a pious activity to dig lakes. But whoever they were, he would force them. They had to stay there and help him dig the lake, and no one was allowed to leave until the lake was complete. Huh? And he wouldn't pay them anything. And he had his soldiers force. Whoever came, whoever was around, you dig. They were digging. So Madhvacharya, he's a sannyasi, great acharya with his disciples. The king's soldiers came and said, you have to dig this lake until it's done, no pay. So Madhvacharya said, I want to meet the king. Madhvacharya was so convincing that he started to talk to the king. And he said, actually, you want us to dig this lake? Very good. But you're such a great soul that if you teach us the proper way to dig it, then we'll dig it properly. After all, what great men do, common men follow. And you're great. You're royal. So you come and you show us the proper way of digging this lake. So the king began to dig. And by Madhvacharya's mystic potency, he became so absorbed in digging himself, the king, that Madhvacharya and his disciples, they all just left. And left the king to dig the lake himself. Rivo! On another occasion, of course, you know, at that time, parts of India were under the Mughal rule. And there was one river, and the Hindus were not allowed to cross the river. And the son of the king of the Mughals from Delhi was actually stationed on the other side of the river with huge armies. And the Hindus said, you cannot cross this river. The soldiers will kill you and torture you and all your followers. So there were no boats going. So Madhva and his followers crossed the river anyway. And as soon as they reached the other side, the soldiers arrested them and decided to kill them. And Madhva said, I want to meet your king. They couldn't believe he was asking to meet the king. He was about to be killed. So he was so convincing and he was so beautiful and charming that they brought him to the king. And the king was shocked. He said, do you know that you are about to die with all of your disciples? Madhva said, I'm not afraid of death. I cannot kill the soul. He said, that same divine God who has created you has created me. And I am doing his work. So why should I fear death? And the king was so much, he was actually preaching a sort of interfaith. The king was so charmed to hear the truth coming from the fearless mouth of the sannyasi that he actually worshipped him and gave him all facilities. Even asked him to stay with him. But Madhva said, we are on our way. So they proceeded. So many wonderful stories. Ultimately, they attained Badrikashram. And again, Madhvacharya humbled himself with great respect and love before his spiritual master. And at that time, Vedavyas gave him blessings to make a commentary on the entire Mahabharata. And it was there in Badrikashram that Madhvacharya compiled his commentary of Mahabharata. And then Vedavyas also gave him 8 Shalagram Shilas as a personal gift. And to this day, the sannyasi acharyas of the Madhva line still worship those 8 Shalagram Shilas. After getting again the loving blessings of his Gurudev, he began to travel. There are so many stories of Madhva's travels. One time it explains, because he would travel through with his followers through jungles, which were filled with dacoits and robbers. One time a whole band of robbers, they decided to kill Madhva and his followers and steal whatever they had. So Madhva took a piece of cloth and wrapped it into a ball and threw it where the robbers were. And by his divine potency, that piece of cloth appeared to be gold. So the robbers thought it was gold and they all began to fight over it. And in the process of the fight, they all killed each other. Rio! Another time, Madhva had one very simple brahmachari disciple. He may have been a sannyasi. His name was Upendra Tirtha. He was just very simple, very peaceful, very loving. And one time a band of 100 robbers came to kill them.
So Upanjatirtha, right in front of all the other devotees' eyes, he grabbed a sword from one of them and started fighting, and he defeated all 100. And everyone was just struck with wonder. How could he never knew how to fight. How could he do this? Then they looked at Madhva, and he was smiling. And they realized that Madhvacharya is Bhima, and he actually empowered his disciple to defeat them. On another occasion, his disciple Satyatirtha was attacked by a man-eating tiger, and the tiger leaped on him and opened his mouth and was about to devour him when Madhvacharya just took the tiger and punched him. And the tiger became so scared he ran away. Anyways, there are many stories like this. Of course, we are not so much concerned with these wonderful miracles as Madhvacharya, because we understand that he's incarnation of Hanuman and Bhima. We take great pleasure in hearing them. But far more important to us than that is what he taught and the purity and the compassion of his life. That is really of the greatest importance. He established the principles of pure bhakti through his life and through his words and through his writings. And he came at a time when bhakti was seen to be something very inferior and very unauthoritative due to the Advaita school of influence. And everything he established was never on the basis of his own words, but he established it all by proving on the authority of the Shastra, of the Vedas. So Madhvacharya lived such a perfect life of devotion and revealed to so many millions and millions of people the perfect life of devotion. When he was about 79 years old, almost 80 years old, he was in Udupi at the Ananteshwar Ashram, or the temple, and there was a certain place. There was a slab of stone about 3 feet by 3 feet that he used to sit on and give his lectures. And on this very day that we are celebrating today, Sripad Madhvacharya, he was speaking on his favorite Upanishad, the Aitareya Upanishad. He already indicated to his followers that he would be soon leaving this world. He told them that when I leave this world, I'm going to go to Badrikashram to live with my Gurudev. You will not see me anymore. So as he was sitting and speaking on the Aitareya Upanishad, he came to a particular verse where he was ecstatically glorifying Lord Krishna. And at that time, his body just disappeared. And the cloth that he was wearing and the garland that he was wearing just fell on the stone platform. And it is explained that at that moment, flowers began to fall from the sky on that raised platform. In this way, Sri Madhvacharya disappeared from this world. But through his teachings, through his life's example, he lives forever in our hearts. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he accepted initiation from Ishwara Puri, who was the disciple of Madhavendra Puri, who was the disciple of Lakshmipati Tirtha, who was in the disciplic succession of Madhvacharya. And in this way, the Supreme Lord himself, personally, revealed the highest truths. There are four most important authorized disciplic successions: the Brahma Sampradaya from Brahma, the Sri Sampradaya, which originated from Lakshmi Devi, the Rudra Sampradaya, and the Kumar Sampradaya. And there were four very, very great exponents that appeared in this age of Kali Yuga to really teach the pure principles of those sampradayas in a magnificent way. One was Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarkacharya, and Madhvacharya. What Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did is he extracted the essence from each of these four sampradayas. And he taught them. From the Madhvacharya Sampradaya, he taught the worship of the deity of Krishna and the refutation of impersonalistic and atheistic philosophies. From the Ramanuja Sampradaya, he taught the path of Raga Bhakti, spontaneous love and service to the Vaishnavas. From the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya, he taught the principles of how to take complete shelter of Krishna. Balabhacharya also came in the line of Vishnu Swami, Sri Krishna Sharanam Mam, that Krishna is the only shelter. And from the Nimbark Sampradaya, he taught the highest position of Srimati Radharani, and that the gopis' love for Krishna was the ultimate expression of divinity. So in this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught this philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, and he came in the he personally accepted the ancestry, spiritual ancestry of Sri Madhvacharya, although he was universal in his approach. And ultimately, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that by understanding these simple basic principles, that we are eternally the servant of Krishna, and if we learn how to associate with Vaishnavas properly, and serve the Lord, and in that mood, if we chant the name of the Lord, then all the conclusions and all the realizations of all the previous acharyas will be revealed to us. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give these sacred teachings to everyone without discrimination in such a simple form that only the Lord himself could give something so high, so deep, and so philosophical in such a simple form. And for this we are eternally indebted to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers for giving us this wonderful opportunity to come together to glorify all of these great saints through the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram.